This is you.
K-U-T.
K-U-T, Austin.
Stop. I used to get mad at my school. Teachers that taught me weren't cool. They're holding me down, turning me around, filling me up with your room. I have to admit, it's getting better, a little better, all the time. Hello, and welcome to Higher Ed, KUT's podcast focusing on issues of higher education, lifelong learning, and exercising the brain. I'm Jennifer Staton with KUT 90.5, Austin's NPR station, talking as always with Dr. Ed Berger, president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. Hello, Ed.
Hello, Jennifer. How are you today?
Well, I'm doing pretty well. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm actually in a good mood, but of course, whenever I'm with you and engaging in interesting conversation, I always feel good.
Oh, good. Well, likewise, I would agree. Pretty soon, for college students, for high school students, they're going to have to start thinking about choosing classes for the next school year already.
That's right.
If they're not sort of thinking about it on kind of a rolling basis. And that got me thinking about that process of choosing classes. Because, you know, when we start in our formal education, you know, kindergarten, maybe nursery school, kindergarten, first grade, elementary school, you're just told you're taking this, 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 and this. And there's really not a lot of latitude, not a lot of choice. But, you know, at some schools, middle school time, maybe an elective or two pops up. And I just started thinking, well, when in that elective process, is it a student choice? Or, you know, when do parents make the choice? When does it sort of shift of who makes the decision? I just think there's a lot. I think there's a lot there that's interesting about who could, should, is making those decisions. And when are younger students really ready, whatever that means, to start making those decisions for themselves?
Wow. I really like this question. That's a tough one. I will tell you that. It's interesting because shouldn't an individual own their education? I mean, we talk about individualized education, and yet if we're talking about a minor, especially a young student, then are they in a position to appreciate? It raises a bunch of questions. The first one is a meta thing, which is that I don't believe that at any grade level, a teacher can be effective by teaching things that those students aren't currently curious about on their own. So what makes teaching hard, in my mind, effective teaching hard, is not the teaching of, for example, mathematics or arithmetic, if we're thinking about lower-ended material, but rather how to move a student to a place where those students are wanting to know or curious about how to add or what a fraction is or what calculus is, rather than saying today we're going to talk about how to add fractions. And so that's the challenge. And so that's kind of a separate issue. But in general, we shouldn't be forcing students to do things that they're not kind of naturally curious about. And so that's a kind of a generic answer. In terms of the answer with respect to, you know, the parent engagement, you know, there are some basic things that we today need. We need to be able to communicate and engage with each other. And that means we need to be able to read and understand what it means to read. We need to be able to communicate, meaning how we speak and how we write, and be able to have other people understand us. And we need to understand how to measure and model the world in basic ways. And so I think that's why we see the curriculum being significantly rigid and somewhat didactic early on, because there are some skills. The interesting thing, and maybe I'm putting your question on the head and on its head, and if
so, go right ahead.
Interrupt me. It's okay. But the interesting thing is that once you start getting to middle school, and you have some agency, like you can pick like what foreign language you want to study and things of that sort, but certainly by high school, where you can really pick your electives. The question is, what are we teaching those students? So if we get in the habit of teaching, you know, reading, writing, arithmetic, the three R's, as they used to say, well, those are kind of skill-based things that we should be using in our ambient world no matter what we end up doing. Then we start learning all this complicated stuff, like in math, you know, you start learning about parabolas and slopes of lines, and you start to look at sines and cosines and logs. Well, are you going to see that in your everyday world all the time and be able to? No.
No.
And yet we teach it that same way. Now, I would argue that if we're going to continue to teach that kind of stuff, where just you're learning stuff and how to do it or what it is,
and kind of that memorizing, regurgitating.
Correct. Then I think it's reasonable to have students make a choice as to what stuff they want to learn. If we begin to focus on practices of the mind, so how to think through Algebra 2 rather than just think about Algebra 2, then I think there's utility to everyone, and you can kind of make a didactic curriculum continue through high school with maybe just modest engagement with a family or even the student, him or herself. So it depends on kind of what education means in that context. But I would say if it's fact-based and it's beyond what is required to be a thoughtful, engaged citizen, then having the student have a little bit more agency makes sense. If it's going to be about how to use different ideas of humankind to think about everything, that has utility to everyone.
So that really requires then kind of students and parents being really aware about the curriculum and the kind of instruction going on, sort of setting aside the subject matter, but just sort of how learning is being taught, if you will.
And that's very hard to do. And I empathize with families because from their thinking, they're saying education is a powerful way out of whatever, you know, to a better life, to a better job, to a better vocation, to a better yourself. And a lot of times that vocation and career and job eclipse the self. And so therefore it's, you know, you're going to be pre-law and you're going to be pre-meds, so you're going to take chemistry and you're going to take this and that. And sometimes that's not the right path. And the idea is if you can make yourself or your student, if you're a parent, the best or a better version of themselves, then they will thrive. And let me just say one thing, which is the beauty of where I am. So I'm, as you know, in undergraduate education, so post-secondary, once they turn 18, by law, we cannot disclose anything to parents. So if parents want to put pressure on their students, they have the right to do so, and they can say, look, I'm paying a lot of money for tuition, and I'm doing this and that, so you will do what I say. But they can't tell us. They can only tell their student. So and that's a great gift for us. So those helicopter parents that like to always kind of land, what we have to say by law is, if we don't have permission from your child to discuss this, we can't even tell you. Even if the question is, are they showing up to class? We can't tell them that.
So we have talked in the past, and I know it's an idea important to you, about effective failure, not just failing or, you know, having something not go well, but learning from that experience and sort of seeing how it transpired.
That's right.
So let's sort of make a little case study here. There's a family, parents, and a student, and the student is about to choose a class that in the parents' estimation student's not going to like it, may struggle in it, doesn't really help that student on the path the student thinks that he or she wants to be on. So the parents think it's a bad idea. Student, you know, kind of interested, kind of not, sort of hard to tell, or maybe the student really wants to take it. Are parents better served to step back and say, you know, we don't really agree with this, but we're going to let the student sign up for this class and experience whatever happens? Or should the parent sort of step in and say, you know, wait a minute, junior student, we really think this is not a good idea. We really want to encourage you to take class B instead of class A.
This is very tough. And obviously there's no correct answer that will work generically in all cases. But I will say that ideally, you know, you're always looking for balance in life, and to do a combination of that, to raise questions, maybe even as going on as far as raising concerns, although then that is then showing a side, if you will, but certainly raising questions, maybe raising some concerns. But at the end of the day, allowing that student ownership of his or her own education and then supporting that student. And even to acknowledge, as you say, that if it doesn't go right, then let's find something that's interesting that we learn from this and that will make us all better, and then learn from that experience. I mean, that's how I would think generically one might consider proceeding, which is to be open and communicate and share ideas. But then at the end, again, thinking that the student's on a little bit on the older side, in high school or at post-secondary, let the student make that decision for him or herself.
So Ed, how about bringing a little balance to this episode, and let's balance it out with a puzzler now. I think it's time. We're up for a new one, right?
We are up for a new one, and I've got a very fun one.
Oh, excellent.
Okay, here we go. You ready?
Yes.
So a passenger train.
I love trains. You didn't know that, but I love trains.
What does that mean?
I don't know. I just love
trains. Do you like riding on trains or thinking about trains?
I love riding on trains.
The clickety-clack.
Yes.
Wow. When's the last time you took a train ride?
I think the last train trip we took was about 3 years ago. The train from Albany to Austin.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Albany to Austin?
Through Chicago.
Wow. Okay. So you need to take one, and this might be the impetus. So a passenger train leaves Georgetown, Texas for Dallas, Texas, traveling at a speed of 80 kilometers per hour. Okay?
Got it.
A half hour later, a freight train leaves Dallas traveling at a speed of 60 kilometers per hour. So, passenger train leaves Georgetown heading for Dallas, going north, heading to Dallas at a speed of 80 kilometers per hour. And then a half hour later, a freight train leaves Dallas heading down south to Georgetown, traveling at a speed of 60 kilometers per hour. And so obviously they will meet because they're on the same tracks. One's going north, one's going south. They're going to meet. The question is, which train will be further from Georgetown when they meet?
Okay, which train further from Georgetown?
That's the riddle.
Does it matter what kind of train they are?
It sure does, and I will not tell you.
Okay, interesting. All right. Any train puzzler is a good puzzler in my book, so I'm very excited about this one.
And we learned something about Jennifer Staten, ladies and gentlemen.
And that I love
host
trains.
Of Morning Editions on
trains.
KUT.
I love them. So, Ed, as we wrap up our discussion about choosing classes, another question about choosing classes, whether students are doing it, parents are doing it, it's a joint effort among all of them. When choosing a class, you know, sometimes a student may really feel a pull like, I want my college application to look good, so I think I better take ... another science or another year of a foreign language or whatever. Or maybe a college student wants to apply to graduate school and thinks, oh, I need a history class to sort of bolster my transcript. I think I know your answer, but I'm curious to hear your discussion about it. What should be the driving factor in students choosing classes?
In the ideal world, it would be a pure curiosity. But we don't live in an ideal world. So, for example, if you are thinking about going to graduate school, then within the context of the graduate program you're considering, there may be courses that either are in your field of study or are tangentially related but helpful. But I would hope that in that circumstance, those courses would appeal to you anyway, because you obviously want to continue to go deeper into that line of investigation. When a high school student is thinking about college, there I think it's less murky. I think that, you know, taking this course or that course to make it look good on your transcript, I don't think is particularly helpful. Instead of playing transcript games, try to enliven yourself. That being said, you know, I teach this course called Effective Thinking Through Creative Puzzle Solving. But, you know, that's not what appears on the transcript.
What appears on the transcript?
What appears on the transcript is effective thinking through creative problem solving. Because people who look at a transcript and see problem solving go, oh, this person can think effectively and can solve problems, and that's perfect. Rather than seeing puzzle solving and saying, oh, that seems whimsical and
right.
Silly.
That person sat around, you know, doing crossword puzzles or whatever.
The truth is that there are puzzles in all our lives, professionally and personally and otherwise. But for some reason, our society, we think of them as problems, and which is a negative connotation. You know, I'm not negative. So even in my course that I teach at Southwestern, the actual official transcript title does not capture the actual spirit of the class. And that's so that the transcript looks better. So it's not an ideal world.
But thank you, Ed, for trying to make it a more ideal world and for helping us keep our brains sharp. Dr. Ed Berger is president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. You can find out more at southwestern.edu. And you can keep your brain busy by keeping up with the news and other episodes of Higher Ed at KUT.org. And you can find Higher Ed on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Jennifer Staten, KUT News.